working with Northwest School of Missions. As you know, every year we have School of Missions missionary come and share a missions effort, what they're doing in the States, around the world, wherever. And it's just wonderful to have them come. And so, Kathy, thank you so much. Jean, thank you so much. And will you share with us?
I can't wait.
Okay.
First, I said, I think I was sitting there thinking I have to have a disclaimer about this outfit. This is a typical Wawan ethnic group outfit that would be worn out to the market. I mean, this is not a dress-up party outfit. This is just a normal, everyday outfit. And when I was there last year, I got three different ones, handmade by this sweet little girl who was learning how to sew. And so I couldn't miss this opportunity to wear one while we're speaking on this journey with Northwest School of Missions. So, now can I switch to this, Albert? Is that right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay, so first of all, I'd like to thank all of you for allowing Jean and I to speak with you today and to share with you a look at what God is doing in this faraway country, and a look at what God is doing in our lives as we journey with these people and try to be Jesus to them and show them love. There's so much to tell you, but today this is just a little bit of what we're going to say. We're going to tell a little bit of our story and how we got involved in a country so far away. We're going to tell a little bit about God's plan for all of Southeast Asia as Myanmar sees it. Myanmar's history, politics, and religion. Believe me, you won't be here for like 4 hours. Jean is going to do a capsule version of that so you'll understand a little bit more about the country. And then a little bit about the 10 years that Asian Children's Mission has been working in Myanmar. And then, of course, my favorite part, the stories of the heart from going over there. And then a little bit about what we think that God is calling us to, but would ask prayer for and the vision for the future. So although that ACM started in 2008, Jean and I actually joined the team in 2012. Since that time, we've just fallen more and more in love with this country, with the land, with the people, with the Jesus, as he teaches us how to walk humbly with a people in so in need of a savior. you might wonder, I'm sure everyone wonders, how in the world we ended up in Myanmar. Well, that's a great story, and I have to mention first that Myanmar was a closed country, which most of you know means no one was allowed in until 2011, was just a hot skip ago. And so it's a great story. I'm just going to share you a little bit of it. In 2010, I was taking a six-week course in community health evangelism in the Philippines. Community health evangelism is a Christ-centered educational program that equips communities to identify certain things. For example, like disease prevention, and we taught them how to sweep the puddle so that the mosquitoes wouldn't come in the puddle and cause dengue fever. I mean, things like that. But they use their own resources in the community to solve problems and have a sustainable change in the community. And Asian Children's Mission and now is really trying to follow all that. So there I was with 15 other missionaries from all over Asia learning about this. And as soon as I turned around and realized that God was not only giving me this new way of ministry that would be more reflective, really, teach a man to fish kind of way of Jesus teaching, that he was also giving me this huge gift that meeting these people would change Jean and my life really forever. So once we were there, so I talked Jean into going. Once the country was open, we need to go. Come on. So we talked Jean into going and meeting these new friends that I had made. And so once we were there, traveling the land and seeing the needs of the people, and of course, meeting all these children, it captured our hearts. And we heard God calling us and saying, step out, come on this crazy journey, and he would guide us. So Northwest School of Missions theme this year is, excuse me, from Philippians 2:13. For it is God who is at work in you to will and to work for his good pleasure. Jean and I love this. Scripture reminds us that it was God's plan. God put the desire in our heart to go and see what he was doing in Myanmar. When in 2011, once I said the country opened, the people of Myanmar, the Christians that were in Myanmar, were praying so hard that people from other countries would now come and work beside them to spread the gospel in Myanmar. So what a thrill that Gene and I have, that we are bringing pleasure to our Almighty God. I mean, that is just amazing. Before I tell you what's been happening through ACM, like I said in the earlier slide, we have to set the stage a little bit and let Gene stretch your brains a little bit and tell you a little bit about the country itself, because we really feel like if you don't know anything about the country, which most people don't, then it will be hard to understand the mountains we have to move, cut down, or climb to do ministry in Myanmar. So, Gene.
Good morning. So, take a look at Myanmar. Just a few facts I'd like to give you. One of the things is, how do you say Myanmar? I've said it Myanmar for years, and I just found out it really comes from two words in Burmese, fast and strong. So it's really pronounced with two syllables and no R. So it's something like Myanmar, something like that. Two syllables, Myanmar. So you're going to hear me say Myanmar, you're going to hear me say Myanmar. And then the British had a lot of problems with Burmese language also. They renamed the country Burma. They just took a different way out. Yeah. So where is it? Well, if we go from the United States in some direction, can you go back over? Yeah. And get on over here. This little green one right here is Myanmar. And you can see that it's kind of wedged in between some pretty large countries. Next slide. So you have, it's bordered by India. India stretches all the way up into here. All of this is India. Bangladesh, which used to be part of East Pakistan, which used to be part of India, is also on the border with Myanmar. China, all up in this area, Laos, and Thailand. So it's kind of wedged in between these giants. It has a lot of influence with them. And China's starting to come into the country pretty big time, building some dams and a few other things, but they put a halt to some of that. So it's about the size of Texas. So this is a pretty big country. North to south, it runs from Seattle to San Diego. So we'll be going from up here down to the bottom. At 1,200 miles of coastline, a lot of natural resources there. It's really nice. Four main rivers run north to south. Most of them are navigable for quite a ways. But Myanmar has been isolated from many other countries. A lot of jungles, high mountains, delta regions, Bay of Bengal over here has kept a lot of people out. It's got a tropical monsoon climate. 80 inches of rain is average on the west coast, up to 200 inches sometimes in a year. Yeah. So you get combinations of a lot of different things there. If you consider the geography, the cultural diversity, the size, and the climate, Myanmar would be like putting together Colorado, Florida, Kentucky, Hawaii, West Virginia, Delaware, New Jersey, and Louisiana, all combined into one place with all the different personalities and all of the physical features of the country. The religion in Myanmar, second century, go back one for just a second, Kathy, second century BC, Buddhism started here, made its way down through Sri Lanka and into Burma, second century before Christ. So 88% of the country is Buddhist. And that was in, the 2016 census. Christianity, however, is the second largest religion in the country, and it's also the fastest growing at 6.2%. So Catholic and Protestant missionaries came to the country 17th and 18th centuries, but in 1966, all foreign missionaries were expelled from the country by the military government. They isolated the country. They closed it down. Most Christians are non-Buddhist, and they're from the mountain regions. And they're from some minority ethnic groups that are in the country, Kachin, the Karen, the Chin, the Lisu, the Ruang, and there's many other ethnic groups, but that's those are the primary ones. 4.3% of the population is Muslim. And you've probably heard of possibly the Rohingya in the Rakhine state of Myanmar, that's right next to Bangladesh there. A lot of fighting going on there. 750,000 refugees have fled that part of Myanmar and gone into Bangladesh. So a lot of disturbance there. A little bit on the history. Burma became a British colony in 1886 after three Anglo-Burma wars that were pursued from India into Burma. Due to the mistrust of the Burmese, the Britons did not trust them. They brought in over 1 million Hindu workers into the country in the 20th century. British ruled Burma as part of India from 1919 until 1937, when it became a crown colony of Britain. Chinese immigration was also very high at this time. There was more immigration coming into Myanmar than there was into the United States at the turn of the century. So you can see that it was a big, big influx of people. World War II saw the occupation of Myanmar by the Japanese. Over 10% of the population, 1.6 million at that time, died from famine alone. So it was devastating to the country. Next door in the Bengal region, 2 to 3 million people died at that time from famine. The total food chain system was just disrupted by World War II in this area. So it took a big toll on the country. So Mandalay, in the center of the country, and the center of Buddhism at that time, was totally destroyed. Yangon, down here, pretty much the financial capital now and then, was pretty well devastated. There wasn't much left after World War II. This is the time and the place, and you may have heard of some of this stuff, the Burma Road to China, when we were supporting nationalist Chinese, the Flying Tigers, you may have seen the John Wayne movie and stuff, and Merrill's Marauders, one of the first Special Forces units that came into existence, were all fighting in this region during World War II. There's great division continued in Myanmar during World War II. The people of Myanmar wanted independence from Britain, and the founding father, Aung San of Myanmar, actually trained in Japan with a lot of his colleagues, came back to Myanmar to fight the British to get them out and bring the Japanese in. They were just tired of the British. But they seen how bad Japanese were to them. They switched sides in the middle of the war. Then they fought with all the Allied forces to get rid of the Japanese. So it's just turbulence there. So in the 1950s, after World War II, Britain was given its independence. They gained their independence from Britain. In the 1950s, Burma is one of the richest countries in Asia, having high literacy rate and an excellent healthcare system. Burma grew quickly from its natural resources and its large oil reserves. Military leaders saw this wealth, and they took over Myanmar in the late 1950s, and nearly all foreigners were expelled out of the country. In 1962, the Burmese army coup d'etat established a military totalitarian rule in Myanmar and closed the country off for 50 years. From 1963 to 67, 300,000 ethnic Indians that were left from prior to World War II, and 100,000 Chinese were expelled out of the country. In 91, Aung San's daughter, this father of modern-day Myanmar, his daughter, Aung San Suu Kyi, you may have seen her picture on a few planes, she won a Nobel Peace Prize for her nonviolent struggle for democracy and human rights in her country. In 2015, with the very good election results of 2014, they created a position for her because she could not hold a regular position. So they created the position of state counselor, something like a prime minister. So she speaks a lot for the country now. Myanmar is politically divided into states and regions. And these states have their own armies, not the big one, but their own. And it's kind of a guerrilla warfare going on there a lot. It's been going on for a long time. This lack of unity has plagued Burma Myanmar for a long time, since before independence. It's the world's longest running civil war in this country, and it still goes on today. We just got a report a month ago, place where we have one of our preschools got bombed. Not the preschool, but the area. But there happen to be a lot of retired generals who live in this area because it's a nice area. So there was it. To date, the democratic process is evolving. It just continues to go on, and I'm looking forward to see where they end up. Keep something in mind, our own U.S. History. We have a Declaration of Independence, and we have a war with England. It was 10 more years before we even had a constitution. So it takes time, and they're getting there. So inflation rate in Myanmar is at 10%. Minimum wage that was established for this year is 4,800 chat per day. That corresponds to $3.20 a day. So average wage, about $100 a month for a 6 to 7 day work week. So they're not overly wealthy there. Myanmar has the highest incidence of natural disasters in Asia. Cyclones, floods, and landslides plague the nation. In 2008, May 2nd, a cyclone Nargis came in through this storm track here. This is low-level delta region. You can see just barely getting out of the dark, the red part here. That's 5 meters. That's about 15, 16 feet above sea level. So when Nargis hit, it came in without any warning from the government. And it came in at midnight. 20 inches of rain fell in about 2 hours, 135 mile an hour winds, and a 12-foot tidal surge. Entire remote villages were just gone. They're just gone. And in the area, aid to the area was non-existent. They didn't know about the storm. The government did not allow aid to come in for over 3 weeks. So picture New Orleans without any warning of Hurricane Katrina and nobody going in to help at all for 3 weeks. And this was much more severe. Okay, officials report they stopped counting at 135,000 dead. 2 million in the region were left homeless. Okay, estimated 40% of those were children. So there was a big need. So two members of ACM, Josiah and Simon, went to this ravaged area in the Delta. They returned with the first 22 children in Hope Mission that they had just finished completing the buildings there. So timely, devastating, terrible, but they got the 22 there. In 2018, there was 280 officially registered orphanages in Myanmar with 36,000 orphans in them. And there's probably just as many unregistered orphanages in that country. So there's a vast need for helping that. So that's a little bit of what Myanmar, where it's located, what it looks like, and stuff like that. I would hope that as we continue to talk, just keep those things in mind of how it's formed the country a little bit and their ideas, but just keep the kids on your mind, because they're the sweet part of this. Sometimes you just have to throw everything else away. So, Myanmar is also located in that Hindu area of India, right in between it, the Buddhist area of China, two large world powers. So they can play a very important purpose in the spread of the gospel in that area. So, I'll let Kathy tell you a little bit about things that are happening in ACM.
Okay, so now that you have a little better understanding about where Myanmar is even and their crazy history, so we ask ourselves, why Myanmar? What is ACM doing to help the children become safe, educated, and grow in Jesus? Well, in 2007, Joanna Jones, the founder of ACM, received a special invitation to travel to Myanmar, and she had planned to teach the Sunday school teachers how to teach Sunday school, and also to talk at a large youth rally. However, God had a different plan. Through that travel journey, she met two different men at two different times and asked them the same question. What is your heart? What do you think God is calling you to? Both men said they wanted to work with children and to have an orphanage. The need was so great in Myanmar. So although she only stayed 3 weeks in the country, before she left the country, she had told them she would help them. She would go back to the States and help raise money for their orphanages and that she would help support them. So as God would have it, right after Hope was finished building, as Jean said, Narges happened. And Josiah, I always laugh at this because he went, you know, he had a wife and at that time two children at home. And he went to help with this relief effort and came home with 22 children. Hi, honey. You know, I'm back. You know, so I always think, wow, that must have been something else. And the kids were ages 4 to 14. And now 10 years later, not only Hope Orphanage, but Living Fountain are alive and thriving 10 years later and teaching up children to follow God's plan in their life. So over these years, God has used people involved in ACM to reach individuals and groups throughout the whole country. We know that this could only have been God because it started with two little orphanages, and 10 years later, we have such a vast array of ministry around the country. And when you think about 35 different ethnic groups, like Jean said, speaking so many different languages, it has to be God moving with his language throughout the country. So that's Joanna there. So in this next section, I'm just going to tell you a little tiny smidge about the staff, then show you or tell you about the locations ACM is in, and then we'll go a little bit into what ACM actually does over there. So for one brave woman to now, we have 27 staff members. This is a small little segment of it that we're, I got a picture of at the celebration last year. But all of them are Burmese. The staff of ACM is in country. We are part of the board of directors, and Joanna actually lives in Cornelius, Oregon, and she is the director and founder, but the staff is what makes the heartbeat of God. It makes it all happen. We just show up over there and help them out for a while and love on them, I was telling Dalbert this, that with the wonderful world of technology, we are in touch with them constantly. You know, we're sending pictures, we're sending questions, they're sending us back reports and all of this. So it's amazing how close you feel, even though you're so far away. Asian Children's Mission now, as I said, is located in 15 different areas throughout the whole country with ministries that stretch way beyond the dreams of the orphanage. So I'm just going to list those things for you because it would take too long for me to explain each one. But we have the two orphanages, Hope Children's Home and Loving Fountain. We have a development center near Yangon now. And within the development center, we have a rural nursing program, a vocational program, an evangelist training program that's just, I would love to talk your ear off about that. It's a wonderful thing. And organic gardens. We have helped with refugee resettlement program and two particular IDP camps up in the north of the country that all we did is buy bathrooms and roofs, and they transformed their community into this beautiful self-sustaining town that they live in. We were assisted in clean water projects. We have one school we opened last year for disabled children, one middle school, one high school that's actually a boarding school. It's almost self-sustaining now. Three elementary schools, six preschools, and we've also, of course, helped with disaster relief because of all the disasters there. So we kind of stand amazed when we look at this, and we think of how God moves in this country, and all we did is just step out in love for these people. Because of an ongoing civil war, as Jean mentioned, none of the staff that is non-Burmese have ever gone to a lot of the areas in the north because the civil war makes it too dangerous and it's closed to us. But we just have a dream that maybe someday there'll be peace in this country and we'll be allowed to go in and meet the staff up there and the people. Actually, that's a misstatement. Actually, we met a lot of the staff in the celebration. We had a 10-year anniversary and the staff came from all over the country, so that was thrilling to meet them. Now, with this time left, though, I'd like to share with you where we do go when we're in Myanmar and the people, some about the people that we meet. We're going to talk about Josiah and Phoebe. We're going to talk about the kids, of course, and Cece and the gang, because that's my passion, is in the kitchen. Joel and Nong Ram in Mandalay area. Joshua School, our first disabled children's school, and Treasure Preschools. So exciting to have little preschools. So, first meet Josiah, Phoebe, and their family. They are this amazing couple who has four children of their own and 55 other children that need their love and care. Josiah is our ACM director in country, and he's also the pastor of the church at Hope. They host all groups that do come in. We do have a few medical groups that come in. FAME goes over there on a regular basis. And we have had a few other groups come in, and Josiah is always their host. They both graduate. And Josiah is in charge of all the outreach. So when there are relief efforts, Josiah is the one coordinating all of that, too. Josiah and Phoebe both graduated from Miramar Bible Institute, and Phoebe teaches over there from time to time. All this while overseeing every single thing that goes on at Hope Children's Home. The ages at Hope are from 4 to 18. Eight of the teenagers who are out of school now stayed at Hope and are helping around in the kitchen and in the preschool. When you stop to think of the 22 first children that came in, some of them are still there because they were a little bitty, right? And some of them have gone on. But it's amazing how many kids have been touched by Phoebe and Josiah. All the children have a story to tell. We don't seem to get a lot of the history, but we know that each heart has been broken. We know that some of them lost their parents. Some were rescued from trafficking situations. Some were rescued from a natural disaster. Different stories, all sad. But we do know that God has brought them to ACM, brought them to Hope's Children's Home or Loving Fountain. And we must care for them with excellence. That giving them every single opportunity possible and teaching them to give back as they have been given. So before I go on, and it's a good time to say just a little tidbit about the education in Myanmar. Burmese society is traditionally values and sees great importance in the education. But after Myanmar achieved independence in 1948, the schools were regarded as some of the very best in all of Asia. But Myanmar missed many advances from being a closed country for 50 years. So they were shut off from the rest of the world under that military dictatorship, and they've been struggling to catch up ever since. In the early years, as Jean mentioned, there were lots of foreign teachers and missionary schools throughout the country, but then they all got kicked out of the country. So the law was changed, and English was taken out of the curriculum as far as learning the language. But ironically, 4 to 5 subjects in the high school curriculum still use English textbooks. But the kids don't know how to speak English, so it's a very complicated situation. They memorize all their answers. Once in top of the region, Myanmar today has unqualified teachers, very little resources, and very aging materials. The education system, as I said, is based on memorization. The passing rate for the exit exam, which is after 10th grade, is less than 20%. So, but even if they did pass and go on to university, they're 16. They've only gone to sophomore year. So how can they compete in the rest of the world? So it's very complicated. We share that about the education because Joanna and ACM are extremely concerned with education in the country. So let's meet a couple of the students, or the kids. He's a student. That's Samuel. You just see, look at that face. You can tell about Samuel right there. So he's 8 years old, and he's in third grade. His father died of a drug overdose, and his mother married another man and gave Samuel to his grandmother. But then his grandmother couldn't care for him, so she brought him to Hope. Samuel is from a Civil War area near the India border. He's been at Hope for 4 years now. Samuel and Jean are great friends. They kid around the whole time we're there. They're just always, they don't speak the same language, Grant. You know, that doesn't seem to matter at all. But he's just a colorful little guy with a great personality. He always sits in the front row. And I asked Josiah for a story to share. And he said, well, what I remember best about Samuel is that when he first came, he would sit in the very first row of church, and he'd fall asleep within the first minute. And he would wake up miraculously like 1 minute before it was all over. You know, so she said, he is getting a little better at that. So. But we know that inside that sweet little heart of that fun little guy, there's a lot of pain. And so we hope to dig a little deeper and help him grow up totally healthy and totally strong. This is David. Don't you just love David already, just seeing his picture? I put that three-year-old picture in there because that is the cutest little picture with his little, that's not actually pajamas like you think it was. It's kind of a typical hangout outfit. So he is 6 years old, and he's in first grade. His parents divorced and both remarried and started a new life, so didn't want David. So they gave David to his aunt, and his aunt already had her own children, so she brought him to Hope. David is from the Northern States area and has been there, like I said, 3 years. Sweet little David, you just have to love him. He's just one of those kind of kids that just want to be around you, you know, so he's just hanging on you and just loving on you, and so you just got to love him back, you know, so he's so fun to be around. So, but we know the Tinder story is when he first came there, he would sneak from, they all sleep on mats on the floor in the big boys' room, and he would sneak from his mat to the leader's mat and lay right by him for the night, you know, so bless his little heart. He was just sad and lonely, but now he's doing a lot better at the orphanage, but we want to just love him like God loved him and provide a healthy future for him. This is Ani Twi. Meet her, and God has a plan for Ani Twi's life. She's so sweet. She's also from a very remote village. And when I say remote, as Jean mentioned, remote means like a 2 days walk to the nearest town that may or may not have a bus. And maybe after that, if you can get on a bus, you can maybe go to a bigger city. I mean, we're talking, or the Delta region where you have to take a boat to get to the village, you know. So she's from that type of upbringing, which had no schools. So, you know, she does have school now. But she has been at Hope for 4 years. Both her mother and father passed away, and nothing else is really known about her. She is doing well in school and has many, many friends. One of her friends is Mo Li Na. This is Mo Li Na. God has a plan for her life, too. She is 8 years old, and she's in second grade. She's also from a very remote village. Her mother is disabled. She's deaf, and she can't speak, and we don't know who the father was. Molini has been at Hope for 2 years. She loves to talk, this little girl. Unfortunately, we don't understand a whole lot of what she's saying, but she keeps on talking to us. So she and Ani Twi are a musical duo, though. So if you want performance, they will sing This Little Light of Mine and Amazing Grace in English to you whenever you want. They'll be happy to do that. So they're so fun to be around. We can't wait to see those two. So Hope Children's Home is where Jean and I spend a lot of our time. I have focused on the kitchen, teaching organic, nutrient-dense cooking and the importance of proteins, good fruit, good vegetables, good oils, and a variety of food. I must say that the cooks have taught me a lot, like how to use every single part of the animal, not wasting a thing, in a very healthy way. So, as I said earlier, we believe that God has called us to do his work with excellence, and we believe that food is a big part of that. The physical, mental, and emotional health of each child relies on a lot of time on the nutrition they are getting. We have already seen evidence in this group at Hope of better health since we have started this nutrient-dense foods, and going back to the traditional foods of Myanmar, their traditional diet is very healthy. They just thought the West had it all figured out, so they started buying the Knorr season packet, you know. So, you know, I'm like, what do you need that for? You already have all these herbs in the soup, you know. So they just thought they should add that because that's what the West does. So we're trying to teach them to do it your old way. Vocational training in this area is really important to us. Jean has focused on this a little bit and taught an small engine repair class and a very short course on plumbing while he was installing a sink. The boys watch with great interest, though, and seem to want to learn more. What we're trying to do at this point is just to present different ideas that maybe would pique their interest so that when they do graduate high school and don't pass that test, they'll have some direction to go. And we're also looking around in the area to see if there's some opportunities for them to intern with local people that are doing all sorts of vocational work. Okay, well, knowing that 100% of the children at Hope Orphanage and Living Fountain have experienced profound trauma, and that's how they ended up there, last year we had a visiting group that did teach a one-day seminar on trauma therapy. Now, this concept, you have to understand, in the Asian culture is very foreign. You know, they're more of a sweep it under, life is tough kind of thing. But we know from you know, all the things that we've done here in the U.S., that the trauma stays there and it's necessary to deal with. So we are trying to continue that, and our staff has a real open mind and open heart to that. So we are going to move in that direction. We also started a very intense English class last year, year-round, and for both orphanages. So we really felt with the country moving in a more progressive way that we would be able to, they would be able to get better jobs in the cities if they could speak English. And also, since those subjects are taught, 4 to 5 classes in high school are taught in English, perhaps learning English would be like a real bonus for them. So we're going to check it out when we get there and see how they're doing on their English. So let's go up to Mandalay now. So this is Joel Nung Ram and their little family, another amazing couple that we have the privilege to work with and support, Joel and Nung Ram. They have 3 children, one of which is Tin Man on the right there. He has cerebral palsy. Joel is a pastor of a small church and translated over 100 lessons for community health evangelism into Burmese for us to use. We have never visited these two. They aren't hosting somebody. Mandalay is central to the country, as you saw. So everybody, there's no hospitals up north. So everybody who needs a hospital from the northern section comes to Mandalay. So people come to the hospital. Doesn't care if they're sick or anything. They're always at their house. And people going somewhere else, you know, because that's a stopover, of course, from coming from the north. So they're always hosting. We've never been visiting in all these years that they aren't hosting someone or multiple people, maybe families, and always giving them a place to sleep and good food. All this while overseeing 2 preschools and our new Joshua School. Both Nung Ram and Joel are graduates of Mirabeau Bible Institute and many times are asked to speak near and far for other events. Before I share about Joshua School, our first school that we opened last year for disabled children, let me share just a little bit about Myanmar's special needs situation. Anyone with disabilities often have a very difficult life there. They are more likely to be uneducated, poor, and unemployed. If a child is blind, deaf, intellectually or physically disabled, mainstream public schools won't accept them. Most of them stay home with their families, and their families have no idea that there's any hope for their child. That being said, at this time, there are 4 schools in the whole country. We only have 6 kids in our school, so we're a small school, but we're one of those 4 in Myanmar. One of them is Eden School, which is in the financial center, Yangon, and they have 200 students. And it's a Christian school, a wonderful school, and that's where our teachers went to train. And they felt very equipped to come and open Joshua School. So in 2017, we met with Nung Ram and Joel and to share this dream of opening a school for special needs children. They told us that, of course, when Nung Ram was pregnant with Tin Man, she prayed with Joel every day that they would have a healthy and whole child, like all of us do when we have when we are pregnant. But when he was born, within a short time, they knew that something was wrong. And not being diagnosed by any doctors there, the family just took care of him the best way they knew how. Yet they were always, always, always praying that God would work a miracle in their little boy's life and heal him completely, and he would have no more disabilities. But after we were meeting with them and sharing what our dream was, they said that now they know what the plan is for Tin Man, what God had in mind for Tin Man's life. So it was such a sweet, sweet time. And we told them that when we met Tin Man 4 years earlier, that we could not get him off our mind, and we knew that God was doing something. But we thought we would just help Tin Man. But then we kind of all started thinking along the same line. God was just sharing this idea, like, why not open a school and help more than just Tin Man? So it's amazing. So soon after, we traveled to Eden Center and spoke to the director there. And it was one of those God moments where you knew you were in the exact place that God wanted you. What he shared with us was the ability to train teachers, the ability for the Tin Man to come there and start therapy, and just everything fit into place. Within a few weeks, we had arranged for Tin Man and the 3 new teachers, his mom, his aunt, and his cousin, to come and train at Eden Center. Now, you have to realize, you know, it's not like training here in the United States to be a special needs teacher. You go for a lot of years. Well, we're dealing with Myanmar where there's no regulations like that. So I think I need to remind you here. In 2018, we opened the first Joshua School. But I just need to remind you that Myanmar is very far behind with teaching children of special needs. If you take into account they were closed for 50 years, and then add to that that they've never ever had anything for special needs children in the first place, that puts a huge mountain of information that they don't have. For the people of the U.S. to bring their knowledge to Myanmar is huge. We are praying that more and more people come with us and work with these children and with the staff. We're also praying that through video conferencing, which the world of technology, right? So we're already starting that, and teachers are able to be here in the United States and help us work with kids there. So that's amazing, too. And then they can tell us what equipment that we can buy here in the United States that we can take over to Myanmar with us. So that's an amazing part of what's happening with Joshua School. Now let me introduce you to the children attending Joshua School. Of course, we'll start with Tin Man. There he is. He is 14 years old now. He's our poster child. They didn't even know what that meant, but we told him he's our poster child. And he will be our inspiration for any other schools in the future. When we met him at 8 years old, he could barely walk. He couldn't walk. He was crawling on the floor with the aid of a scooter. And now... Tin Man loves to walk every day. He's walking somewhere. And that's about 6 months old, that picture. So who knows where it's doing now. So he's learning so many things once he started therapy. Of course, we're more familiar with that. But his upper body has so much strength now that he's able to do many more tasks that he could do before. And now he knows his colors, and he's learning the Burmese alphabet. I mean, just a whole new world for this kid. He tries to talk too, so and the caretakers can understand him quite well. Sometimes clear, sometimes with body language, and we hear he yells at the other kids if they're not listening to their teacher, so that's good. We love him, and so does everybody else. Last year, we were told how important it is for cerebral palsy kids to have the right positioning in a chair. Here it would be a special chair made for them, you know, so that they would be able to function and talk and everything. So the next day, we shared that with Joel and Nong Ram, and the next day they brought these carpenters over. they made this chair for him out of teak from the scrap pile. So, and then we spent 2 weeks trying to find cushions to actually position him in this chair. So Sharon, God has a plan for Sharon's life. She's 7 years old, and she has Down syndrome. Her parents didn't think there was any hope for her or anything that could be done for her, but she is amazing, and she's progressing so fast. And also, her health, her overall health has improved because she loves coming to school. Yandana is a 22-year-old girl who comes to our school that was at preschool for 6 years and didn't learn anything there. So her parents took her out, and she hasn't been in school since. So what they want for her is to learn life skills. They're not interested in academic work, but we are still diagnosing her. We don't know for sure if we can help her with that, but she loves to sing and dance. So she's bringing much joy to the school. So she's there every day. ACM preschools. ACM is one of the first groups to ever bring preschools to Myanmar, and they're thriving, and we're sending out kindergartners that are ahead of their class, so that is just thrilling. Our schools are well equipped. We have lots of equipment, and we have wonderful teachers too. So without a delight, it's such a delight for us because our kids are Hindu, Muslim, Buddhist, and Christian. So we hear them singing little sweet songs of Jesus, and then we have celebrations with the parents, of course, and they come in. So it's a great community development way to share the gospel and to become friends with their parents. Well, last year, ACM celebrated their 10th anniversary, and what a celebration we had. People from all over the country, the staff came in, and we celebrated. This is typical Lisu outfits that they wear, and... Everyone was so excited. We just had a wonderful, wonderful time and celebrated what God has been doing in Myanmar. The tribute was to God, that he seeks out those that know him, all the staff and everything, and blesses them so much. But he also searches out those people that are so lost in ways we can't even fathom. It's just amazing. And the stories that were told, it gives me chill bumps right now, I'm just talking about it, that were told by this staff that's all over the country were just amazing and so inspiring. So where do we go from here? We're not sure, but we have some ideas of where to go. What I said earlier was we want to do God's work with excellence. Sometimes you can get so excited and there's so many needs all over the country that you're just going like a chicken with his head cut off, you know. But we don't want to do that. We want to come back and focus on what we've already done. The team has come up with 5 different things. First of all, help kids get more educated. Wow, how can we do that? Does ACM need to start schools at that would go from primary all the way up to high school at the orphanages? We have the space. We just need the teachers. The teachers would have to come probably from out of the country or be educated in private schools in Myanmar. Is that what God's calling us to do? A farm at the development center. This is entirely possible. You guys could come and help me because you're farmers in here. we want hope that maybe even some nonprofits that are farm-oriented, like Heifer International, might come alongside of us. But we have identified the man as Atui over there on the right, and he's a pig farmer right now, but he would be perfect for heading up this proposition. As I said earlier, this is my passion, and I am particularly interested in the protein levels of the kids in the orphanage. And we have 133 children between both orphanages, and they don't eat enough protein on a daily basis. This is an expensive part of their diet, and we think that the only way it could be sustainable is to start a farm and raise some of our own food. Is God leading us that way? More Joshua schools. Joanna has a burning desire to start more Joshua schools. But training the teachers is major and very important. It is challenging, stressful, but very rewarding. So what we have scheduled now is for the young people from the rural nursing program then to go to Eden Center, train there with them for a few weeks, and then come up to Mandalay and train for a few more weeks. And after that, they'll be able to see if really that's where they want to go, and then we'll get them more education. So maybe this is, we have a option to purchase a house too that's right near Hope Orphanage that could be used for the school and something else in the interim. I don't know, is this where God is leading us? And a 2-year program for kids. This goes back to our doing it with excellence. These kids graduate school at 16 years old after a 10th grade education, less than 20% pass the test. You just turn them out of the orphanage? I mean, that just sounds wrong. So we're thinking of a 2-year program where we mentor these teens. We help them find an apartment where 4 to 6 youths would live in appropriate genders, right, would live in the apartments. Then they would assist them in finding them a good church, assist them in directing them for employment, and we teach them about money management, living in an apartment, you know, honoring God and their new freedom, and a million other things that 16-year-olds need to be mentored in. Is God leading us that way? And last, microloans. We're so convinced that severe poverty is a big part of the problem here. Microloans for women wanting to start businesses. We have started a few in the sewing businesses to make these beautiful outfits like this. Joanna said one day to us that orphanages aren't the answer. That's not God's design. What we need to do is empower these people so that they will become self-sustaining and keep their kids and take in other kids and certainly never sell their kids into slavery. So we know the problem. We want to help. Is God leading us that way? Well, this is it. This was a quick glimpse of what God has been doing in this faraway place in Myanmar. Jean and I know without a doubt that God called us to Myanmar. We are humbled, and yet we are awed by what we have seen, and we appreciate so much that God called us to do this work. He has put a desire in our hearts, and we see that going to this country, he grew it through his Holy Spirit living inside of us. It is not in our own strength that we do this by any means, but it's a strength of the Almighty God. He has seen these people that have traveled so far away from him, and he just wants us to be Jesus and bring them home. Thank you so much for allowing us to share a little bit of this ministry with you. We obviously love it. These are the kids from Hope. Gotta love that, don't you? I just put it on to smile every day. So all of you are welcome to come with us. It's a short 22 ride on an airplane, 22-hour ride on an airplane to a hot and humid land with very little electricity, but with gentle people that love to welcome you and say Ming Le Ba. So, thank you.